Welcome, everyone. It's Parkside Today, featuring conversation and interesting discussion with members of the UW Parkside Learning Community. I'm John Melke, Director of Strategic Communications. It's my pleasure to welcome UW Parkside Professor of Communication, Dr. Teresa Castor, and Professor of Geosciences, Dr. John Skalbeck. Teresa and John, thanks for joining us on Parkside Today.
Sure, our pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
You know, maybe some of the people listening may find it a bit interesting that we have a communication professor and a geosciences professor on the same program, but the two of you have been working rather closely together for quite some time. Teresa, let's start with you. Tell us a little bit about why you're working together.
I have an interest in crisis communication, and it might sound odd at first about us working together, but basically with the water discussions that have been happening in this area, I view this as an opportunity for studying discussions about potential problems in the area or about how people have addressed problems. And with the Waukesha issue, that is something where there's been a lot of community discussions and trying to figure out what are the different problems, what are the best ways to approach solutions. And I'll also add, I have an interest on the intersection between science and communication. And again, with the Waukesha water issue, this is an area where communication and science have come together very nicely.
Dr. Skalbeck, your take on the partnership?
Well, my background is in water science, and I teach a class, Great Lakes Water Resources, and studying the Waukesha issue in the context of the Great Lakes Compact is something we study in the class, and then started following the application process and met up with Dr. Castor, and I also share an interest in science communication, so it was a perfect kind of melding of our disciplines to look at this project together.
Teresa, the application process for Waukesha, I think, and you can correct me, John, when I get off base here, but was it like 3,000 pages of data that was shared or that was part of the application process?
Well, it's a lot of data. It takes up a lot of space on my hard drive. But I want to turn this question over to John because he addressed this during Science Night in a very, very vivid visual way.
Yes. So the Waukesha application itself, the document that was put together by the Waukesha Water Utility, was a 3,000-page document. And they contrast that to two previous water diversion applications, one for Pleasant Prairie, which was around 30 pages, and one for, I believe, the city of Akron, which was around 100 pages. And the point of that comparison is that there was a lot of work that went into this application, a lot of science to address all the issues that needed to be satisfied to get approval under the Great Lakes Compact.
And Dr. Castor, from the communication side, when you first get involved in the project, what do you see or how do you identify some of the communication challenges possibly? And maybe challenges sounds like it's taking a negative tack right away, but the challenges and also the opportunities with this particular project.
Okay. Well, how I got involved with data collecting was by going to the public hearings that were held in Waukesha, Milwaukee, and Racine, and basically listening to the community comments regarding the Waukesha application. And one of the things that I and my research assistant, Kristen Koletsky, noticed was that there are different ways of talking about this issue. So John mentioned the science involved and how much there was science involved. Well, this isn't just a science topic. It's also a legal topic. John also mentioned the compact, and that's also itself is a long document. But then there's also the personal experiences of the people who are affected by the water, basically people who take their kids out to Lake Michigan or to the different rivers involved. Mm-hmm. So for me, one of the communication challenges that I see is that there are different experiences people have and also different knowledge bases. And it's hard to get a mastery over all of those. I mean, there are lawyers who look at the legal end. There are scientists like John who look at the science end. Mm-hmm. And then there are everyday community members who basically their lives are surrounding the water. And mm-hmm. the challenge I see is trying to bridge those different bodies of knowledge.
So, John, from your perspective, the science part of the project, identify, if you can, some of the major issues in the project and how did you view those or take a look at those from a scientist standpoint?
Probably the major issue of contention had to do with the return flow to the Root River, mm-hmm. which, you know, obviously would have some impact to Racine, since the Root River runs through through the middle of Racine and out to the Racine Harbor. So a couple things. One was the volume of water was a consideration. And, you know, it was important to get folks to understand that for Waukesha's application, the volume of water that they were going to take from Lake Michigan and then return to the Root River was the same. It was 100% return. Mm-hmm. So there would be no net loss to the Great Lakes Basin. But probably the most contentious issue was the water quality. And in any wastewater treatment, the water quality will be not the same as when it was taken from Lake Michigan. That's just part of the aspects of wastewater. Typically, you have slightly higher nutrient contents in the wastewater. The most concern is phosphorus. So that was an item of a lot of discussion, and that can be a difficult topic to get across to the general public about the fact that there are limits that would go into a permit process for wastewater discharge, and that those you know limits would have to be abided by under the terms of the final decision for the application's approval.
Mm-hmm. And so part of UW Parkside's responsibility or involvement with the project is taking a look at the water quality, the discharge water, the water that's coming through the Root River, and that process has already started.
Yes, so both you know my involvement and Dr. Castor's involvement in studying the issue, you know, brought to the attention of Waukesha Water Utility our expertise in this issue, and so they asked us to submit a bid to do the background water quality sampling for this permit process, and so we've completed a full year of water quality monitoring on the Root River, and that involves collecting samples to be analyzed for general chemistry. Mm-hmm. It also involves a macroinvertebrate survey done by Dr. Olofsky in our biology department, and then also a fish survey study. And all this provides sort of background data for the conditions of the Root River prior to introducing wastewater.
And Teresa, as a person looking at this from a communication side, you also see the discussions that go on in the media. How does some of the things that are in the media differ, or are they the same as other discussions that might take place during the application process or the legal part? Where does the media fit into that in the communication, I guess, cycle or process?
That's a really interesting question, John. And, well, it fits in a lot of different ways, but one of the things that I noticed is how, I guess, a lot of different sides and arguments, especially on the part of different interest groups, get amplified and have a forum in the media. Also, I think it's important to note that the discussion about this situation has changed. I mean, basically, at the very beginning, there was a lot of concern regarding the Waukesha application, a lot of concern about the precedent that it would set. And that's one of the reasons why this is such an important topic to study. Mm-hmm. And those concerns were getting played out and voiced in the media. Well, after the public hearing, there was a process where the regional body then assessed and evaluated the application. And this is the group that consists of representatives from the 8 different Great Lakes states, as well as 2 Canadian provinces. And they had a lot of critical questions. And I will say that group was able to look at it from different angles, scientific, legal, political. And in the process, there were some changes that they had asked for in the Waukesha application. Mm. And some of those changes did reflect some of the concerns that were expressed by the groups. And so in the end, what a lot of people said was that the compact ended up working in terms of doing what it was supposed to do, mm-hmm. in having restrictions and regulations regarding how water is used from the Great Lakes.
And John, you mentioned a little bit ago the phrase you used, Great Lakes Basin. What is the Great Lakes Basin?
Well, the Great Lakes Basin is a description of the watershed that incorporates all the five Great Lakes states. Mm. So it's basically a boundary which is based on surface topography that dictates where water will flow. So if you're inside the basin boundary, the water will flow towards the lakes. If you're outside the basin boundary, it'll flow outside of the basin or to another watershed. So the basin boundary, the watershed boundary, is the limitation of the Great Lakes Compact. So that's what drives who can apply for water diversions, whether you're a straddling community on the boundary or a community within a straddling county. If you're outside of the basin, you don't have an opportunity to ask for water. So, say you're Madison. Madison is outside the boundary. The county, Dane County, is outside the basin boundary. So they would never have an opportunity to request Great Lakes water.
And Waukesha a straddling community or a straddling county?
They are a straddling county. So they're a community within a straddling county.
Okay, so that therein lies the reason for the application, because they're not completely within the Great Lakes Basin.
Right, and that designation requires the most rigorous review and approval. So it requires an approval of the eight Great Lakes states' governor's office, essentially. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you are a straddling a community, it only requires the approval of the state that you're in.
And not too long ago, the project seems to take quite a little bit of a left turn, a little bit of a detour, in that Waukesha is planning to get its water through Oak Creek. Oak Creek is going to provide the water source to Waukesha, the water coming from Lake Michigan. Milwaukee enters the picture, and now at this point, Milwaukee is providing the water. How did that change the project, not only from a scientific standpoint, but then also from a communication side, if it did?
Well, it's really more of an engineering aspect. Once the application was approved, Milwaukee came back and approached Waukesha and was interested in rebidding for the sale of the water. And so there's a substantial savings of getting the water from Milwaukee versus Oak Creek. Basically, it's a transport pipeline distance is less. So Waukesha, has a fiduciary duty to take the lowest cost approach. And so it appears that they'll now get it from Milwaukee versus Oak Creek.
And Dr. Castor, a communication challenge there with the change from Oak Creek to Milwaukee? Or
well, I would say that the challenging communication, or the communication process, that was the most challenging in terms of the public discussion and hearings and the many meetings. That had already gone through and was approved. And so when it came time for the Milwaukee one, basically it was, I would characterize it more as a matter of substitution of supplier. So basically the framework was already set up in the prior work that Waukesha had already done.
So now I'd like to bring the UW Parkside student into the discussion from the communication side, from the science side, and I'll let you, two of you, decide which one wants to go first with this. How does it impact UW Parkside students?
You want to start?
Well, sure. It's given me a chance to work with undergraduate students. I had a student I mentioned earlier, Kristen, who received an undergraduate research apprenticeship grant for working with me on the initial project to study that the public discussion. So in terms of undergraduate research, I've been able to engage in that more closely. Mm-hmm. Also, one of the classes I teach is health communication, and it has had more of an indirect impact there. But one of my goals in that class is to have students think about how to, again, bridge discourse between everyday language and more scientific talk. So it's helped me to think through that class a bit more and how to talk about the importance of being able to engage people from scientific perspectives, and I'll just call it everyday perspective. So those are some of the general ways that it's impacted what I do here at Parkside with students.
Mm-hmm. And for me, there's two aspects as sort of a classroom education component, where this topic provides just a great example of the meshing of science and policy and public awareness. So it gets taught in a general education class, the Great Lakes Water Resources, mm-hmm. as well as some of my upper division courses, hydrogeology and a water sampling class. But then there's a practical sort of hands-on learning aspect as well in that we hire students to do the water sampling that Waukesha has contracted us to do. So our students get an opportunity to do a real life sampling plan where mm-hmm. it's of the highest rigor as far as the sampling protocol and the documentation protocol required for a professional study that they'll use as background data for their permitting process.
And for both communication and geosciences students, do you see that because it is a topic it's been in the news media, it's discussion topic, it's a real live community engagement topic, does that make a difference for your students as far as their involvement or how they see their involvement in the project?
Yeah, I would definitely say so. Again, going with Kristen, we had actually talked about a different but related water project. But then as we learned more about the Waukesha hearings that came up, I mean, Kristen is lives in Racine, and we switched her project because of the closer connection that she felt with it. And it's enabled me to talk about it more readily with my students because of the close connection with mm-hmm. where we live.
Yeah, I think our students look at it as a badge of honor that, Parkside's involved in what I refer to as a world-class kind of a decision. This is the first test of the Great Lakes Compact. It's a very important federal law that was set up to protect the Great Lakes, which is world-renowned for its impact on the region. And here we're involved, the first test of that compact, and looking to be continue to be involved as the years go by. Once the infrastructure is in place and the return flow is being introduced to the Root River, that will continue to be able to be part of the monitoring team and other aspects that go along with it.
And regardless of the Waukesha question or the Waukesha project, just the availability of fresh water for communities is a topic in itself, right? It's something when you look 5, 10, 15, 20 years out, maybe some communities wonder where they're going to be able to get the water, or does it impact development? From a communication side, what does that future discussion look like when it comes to the availability or scarcity of fresh water?
I would just say before I start talking about that, just to give you background information, I grew up in California. And as a little girl, I remember the droughts. I remember limitations and how much we could fill up our bathtub. I remember paying attention to when we could water our yards, our wash our cars, or even order a glass of water from a restaurant. And so when I moved to this area and learned more about the Great Lakes, I just realized, it just really helped emphasize how important the Great Lakes are and what an important resource it is and how important it is for us to protect it, to treat it well because of the variety of ways that it benefits us, and as well as the scarcity overall of water worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of, actually, could you repeat the question again, John?
Well, I think that was it.
It was the
discussion about whether it's scarcity of water, the availability of fresh water, and it's not, and with the, we'll say, increased development, with the change in population and more development and more communities looking at, we need fresh water. We need this water here. And how does that frame the communication message, or how does that frame how some communities talk about the need for water?
Okay, well, I think that mention of my California experience helps
right.
to address that.
Yeah.
But I also want to add, I guess, another example from a book that I read, the example of the Aral Sea, and how basically water was taken from it but not returned, and it diminished in size. John, you probably know the percentage, but basically it devastated communities. Farms were no longer farms, but turned into deserts, and parts of the Aral Sea became deserts because of the amount of water that was came out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a good cautionary tale for us to have regarding water and how we have to make sure that we protect it for future uses and future appreciation.
And John, I'm going to jump ahead to something that we've had this conversation where you've said sometimes when the discussion turns to, don't send the wastewater this way or that way, And I've heard you say in some communities they'd be arguing over who gets to get the wastewater.
Yeah, I lived in Northern California for a while where, you know, again, water was scarce and wastewater was a valued commodity.
Mm-hmm.
This whole discussion, I think, with Waukesha and its application to the Great Lakes Compact is just a great example to remind folks of this precious resource and get them to actually think about how lucky they are to live near such an available resource. Some folks perhaps, you know, weren't even sure where their water comes from, but this provides an avenue to talk about that, discuss that, and bring general awareness up of the value for protecting a resource like that. I refer to the Lake Michigan as the big pond, and that folks might look at it and not even think twice about scarcity of water. But if they were to live somewhere else, like in Southern California or Arizona, where awareness of water scarcity is sometimes a daily reminder, it just brings up people's awareness, and that's the whole idea of sort of using this as an educational opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to add,
sure.
think in a lot of ways, the term lake is a little misleading. I mean, they're technically inland freshwater seas.
Mm, okay. They're big enough to be a sea, it would seem like. So, yeah. And we've got a little bit of time left, and I want to kind of shift the conversation as we close this out to both of you have been involved with UW Parkside for a number of years. And how do you view UW Parkside students from the science side, the students that you come in contact with, that you instruct, that you're involved in the community engagement with? How do you describe them?
Well, you know, we do have a unique demographic of our students. Many of them are first generation college students, and so they perhaps have not as much of an informed idea about what higher ed's about.
Mm-hmm.
But then we get very close contact with getting them involved in our research opportunities, our community engagement opportunities, and so I find that they're just great, eager students that latch on to these opportunities, and they graduate with a nice set of tools that make them very employable in future careers. So I really like the smaller community that we have here. You know, a smaller campus where we can interact with our students directly and get them involved in the things that we do and value here at the university, and it's both an advantageous thing for them as well as for us who lead them.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Castor.
Well, I'll just say that I feel that the students at Parkside really enjoy and value getting involved with project-based learning, so they're not just sitting in the classroom passively, but applying what they know in projects like research projects or going out and doing interviews rather than just talking about interviews or planning events rather than studying how other people have planned events. And that's something where I feel like our students really thrive in terms of bringing together their prior background knowledge. I mean, a lot of our students work full-time, part-time, mm-hmm. and have a lot of practical experiences that they can then bring together in the classroom in doing these different projects, our community-based learning events. So I'll just say I think they have fun with it, and as an instructor, I have fun with these kind of projects also.
Good, good. Well, I want to thank you both for taking time out of your busy schedules to be on Parkside today. This is John Melke, and it's been my pleasure to be joined by Dr. Teresa Castor, Professor of Communication, and Dr. John Skalbach, Professor of Geosciences. Thank you very much both for being here.
Thank you.